Oh, the lows, put the lows, scoop the mids.
Because you're in. You're in.
Oh, yeah, I'm good. No, I got headroom. Yeah, I get way close to that fucking microphone.
You get right up on it. Coming in red hot. Mm-hmm. Coming in red hot.
Ice cold. You like that?
I do.
What is that, a Voodoo Ranger?
Voodoo Ranger, guys. They bought up several breweries, you know, but Voodoo Ranger,
9.5% alcohol.
Yes, sir. Oh, yeah, God. I'm an IPA guy, but I'm not an elitist, right, dude. I just like this one.
Right, right.
A lot of people hate it, but you go tall boys, you go 9.5, get you where you need to go.
Get to where you need to go.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not going to sit here and piss out Miller like a fucking little bitch for the next 2-3 hours. You can go right ahead with that. And I'm not having a White Claw or whatever. I'm going to have, sorry, Andy, a man beer.
You know, that's so funny because I don't know if I understand. To this day, even with, you know, 10 years of sobriety under my belt.
Yeah, on the point. Give it to him. 10 years of sobriety. It ain't easy, y'all.
Hey, I'm just saying. Right. Even now, I still don't understand people that can just casually drink. Like, for me, for a guy to just sip on a little Mick Ultra or a fucking couple of Miller Lights.
You like the edge, it just takes off right, a little. It's right. Just a little.
Which, I get people.
Hair
like,
of the dog, yeah, as they
but
say.
I also don't understand, like, for me, it was like I wanted to get to a destination, you know? That little shit's not going to. I'm going to have to drink a case of beer to get there. That. You know what I mean?
You know, path of least resistance here. You know, and if I'm going to fucking...
Give me a six-pack of Bud Heavy and 2 40s of OE, and that's a start of the night.
I say, and we came from a place being taught by the old schooler. You don't fuck around.
Right, you don't fuck around.
You know, if you want to throw drinks, that's fine. That's a good thing. That's a smart thing.
Right.
But the idea is that if you can't maintain, you're that guy who everybody is going to fucking bar toss out the party.
If you can't maintain, you can't entertain.
Yeah, to say, I might, like, I think B-Real said, you fuck around, I might have to get ragamuffin. Ragamuffin.
This pig straight up opened my house down.
Yeah. And it's true, you know, like, you'll get tossed out the fucking party.
You get tossed out
you
the
get
party.
Stomped.
Tarsed? I said tarsed. You get tarsed out the party.
A good old-fashioned stomping off,
a good old-fashioned stomping. A lot
of people could use that these days, myself included. A good old-fashioned ass whooping.
Oh, I don't know about you. Why would you say that?
You know, it's all good. Humble.
You are a barbarian.
Every town has an Elm Street.
You know, when family and friends get together, there can also be a lot of drinking and drugging, and that's why it's so important to pick your friends the party you party. You know what I'm saying?
Meow.
You're only supposed to blow the bloody doors off.
Ghosts and goblins.
Yeah, used to be shithouse.
It's a good change.
Got to catch the red eye.
Welcome to Comic-Con, a geek podcast for the rest of us. A geek podcast for the rest of us.
Welcome to Comic Con's podcast, a geek podcast for the rest of us. Who are the rest of us, huh? Who the fuck are the rest of us?
Oh,
huh?
Everybody. I see you. I see you.
I see you over there. I don't even mean it.
Why is everybody throwing up? Why am I always gagging?
Zang!
Mm-hmm. There's going to be a lot of references on here, and if you don't catch the train, folks, you're going to miss it. The train of thought came to take you here.
You're going to have to rewind it, slow it down. They got that Moasis AI. You got to pay for the subscription. Bunch of bullshit. Slow it down. Listen to these. Take notes.
Take notes. Listen, sometimes you got to do an in-person podcast. You know what I'm saying? Nick Stevens, your boysy on the mic C, your hostie with the mosty. Uh-huh. You know what I'm saying? Joining me, not on that ZMM, we're here in the basement. Is Mr. none other than anybody else, Mr. Johnny Barnes.
Hey!
And we didn't redline. We've got like right up on that red line.
Yeah,
that
I tried to take it to it. I've been doing this for a little while. Not podcasting. But...
No, but you've been a sound engineer for a hotsy minute.
Yeah, it's hard to believe now.
You know? Goddamn.
Officially trained for 14 years now. But full of shit for far many more. You know, so it's all good. But yeah.
It was too real. It was too real.
Because it is.
It's good to see you, though.
Yeah, it is, man. It's great to see you.
And it's good to be seen.
Yeah, and this my homie's down from a different location. He's down here, man. Visiting fam, and he made the time to come over and see this sick prick. You know, he said maybe...
Well, we may or may not have done some recordings, you know, together
once in a while over the course of our lives. It's hard to believe. I guess officially, me and you've been working on projects together for is it 10 years now?
It is 10 years.
Because 2014 was the last vinyl round, and then that changed, and that was when we sequels did it.
We can fucking use it. Mm-hmm. And the little Ampagory guy.
And
you know,
all of a sudden,
on all your listening platforms.
Yep, exactly. Every single one of them.
You know, and I wouldn't have been able to do half any of that shit. Dare I say, none of that shit without you, my man.
And I appreciate it. Well, it takes two to tango. It does, or something like that.
It does take two to tango.
You know, so once again,
you might be a street sweeper.
You might be a king or a little street sweeper. But
sooner or later.
You dance with the reaper.
Put your left foot in. You put your right foot out. This is my son, Zeph, loves this when I do this. You put your eye foot in and shake it all around.
Oh, that's a
good
one. You
do the hoggy boggy and you turn yourself around.
That's kind of like a French meets Born in East LA kind of a situation.
He loves it. When I do the turn yourself around, he's fucking dying.
And the lip goes on.
There's a lot of sound around. Because that's what it's all about right there, you know, making people laugh. That's why I do this podcast. You're asking yourself, wait, are they going to talk about... What are they talking about? What nerd or news culture came out this week? Who gives a fucking shit? You know?
Fuck you too, man. No, stay on. Don't change. Because
it's not that kind of podcast. If you haven't figured out, if you don't know me by now, you will never, ever, ever know me. Ooh, I was hoping you'd do some backup on that one.
I'm not always on point.
He's keeping time with the fucking...
Your backups
on that last one we did together, one we did for my dad, that was really something, man.
Yeah,
that was
I appreciate it. Anytime I get to record a song that actually comes from the truest of places, you know, all you can do is try to make the song. I mean, that's all recording really is. Mm-hmm. Trying to make whatever's in front of you as good as possible and trying to remove that shitty thing they call ego.
Right. Get the fuck out of here.
You know, no shredding over this one, John.
You're playing all over my notes.
Exactly. But no, it is. You got to have something good to start with before anybody comes to your studio or recording environment, you know, period. You know, it's one thing to record your own stuff. It's another thing to have a consistent fellow buddy and musician that has a vision with it and has something that's inside. It's got to get it out.
I appreciate that.
Fluid music.
Right.
Anything, you know.
Kissing.
And you got a safe space to blow that wide.
Right. Absolutely.
And, you know, here we are. It might take a little longer than it did in our 20s
mm-hmm.
to get it done, mm-hmm. you know, but here we are, you know.
But you are what I would call and maybe I should do a better job of this. When I promoted stuff in the past, I've talked about you, I've talked up your skills, but you are, and not to just suck a dick, but you are a sage. In my opinion.
That's very nice of
you. You know a lot about bands, you know a lot about history, and it's different kinds of music. Maybe if you have a forte, of course everybody has a niche. But you've been able to bring different things to the table, I think.
Well,
you've recorded with different types of music.
Yeah, I mean, you try to be, with, like I said, come back to the recording, and you try to be the glue that like meets this style with that style and understanding what needs to happen for the song or for the product. So you pull from a lot of different places. And playing multiple styles of music over the years and instruments. It's crossover.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like working out. You try one thing and it helps with another.
Right.
It really is true. It sounds sentimental and beep. But
I can't help but go there first. I got to get that out of the way first.
And you got to be able to have a real product to actually have a real product at the end of it. That's what it comes down to. There's a lot of music out there, but when you need to make something legitimate and you can see it through. No matter how long it takes, you know, you do it, you know.
Right.
And that's where we're at. We're getting close. We've recorded a lot of damn music for this second.
I know. I've been kind of putting them out like piece by piece. And folks,
the way everybody does now.
In case you're wondering, like, what the fuck are we even doing over here? You know what I'm saying? Listen, here's the deal, okay? Mm-hmm. Because the music, some of the music you've heard over the years in the Comic-Con's intro is from these very recordings.
Yeah, from this stinky cesspool. It's not that bad. It's not too bad. It's not too bad right now, but
and it's also people that have long time listeners.
Yes.
even first-time callers will know that we've been at this a while. And over the years, nowadays it's gotten to the point where, like, at the end of every show, if I just like a song, even from another band, I'll just kind of put 30 seconds of it at the tail end of it, especially if it's like a weird, like, rare live recording. But the intro, for the most part, except for the Comic-Con's jingle by Deja Queen David, okay, shout out with the welcome. I'm not even going to do it. You know what? I'm not even going to do it because I can't hit those notes. You know what I'm saying? But on that same note, you know what she told me one time? Hmm. And I think I've said this before in the podcast. Because I don't want to name names, but, you know, some people used to kind of give me shit for some of my bra, bra, bra. You know what I'm saying? I'm not.
Yeah, if you
it is what it is.
Yeah, you know? Are who you are.
Right. And you know what she said? She said, that's because they ain't got no soul.
Yeah, there you go.
Mm.
It's true. And they're contemplating about how fast or slow the vibrato is supposed
right.
to be. All the while you've written two or three or four great fucking songs
right.
with your stamp on it. Sometimes you learn and you
I just said right to like me writing
right.
great
stuff. Yeah, man. I'd say, yeah. You know, you write great stuff.
And I'm
you know,
humble.
You're good. You know, the modesty just pours
and
out.
And I'm humble.
Here. Yeah, but no, it is true. A lot of people, when they're trying to find their voice, I mean, I'm speaking of music because it's my forte or our forte. It takes a long time to be able to do that and accept the fact that you sound like you sound naturally in the direction you go, but then you grow and then you look back on what you did and you make it better, but you're not trying to utilize other people's tools to make it your sound. It's your sound, you know.
Right.
A lot of people don't even get to that point.
They don't.
They at all, you know. With a modestly priced instrument. And that's easier now than it used to be.
Right.
But if you're motivated to learn on something, you'll do it.
Right.
And there's two different people in the world, people who are going to think about it and wait.
Right.
There's people who are going to make it happen. I mean, I have students I've been teaching them drums for almost 6 months and I have a drum set.
Right.
Because their parents are like, you know, and I get it. But I'm like, if you want to play, you play on a fucking pillow.
Right.
You'll put those
pots and pans.
You're going to get those fucking ankle weights I told you to get. And play air drum. I'm
right.
like, you got to be able to want it. You know, you got to make it happen. Now, it's easier said than done. It's not fancy.
It's an obstacle for sure.
But it's the same thing. So, yeah, people are always going to sell their shit.
Right. And, like, I learned on the guitar that my sister eventually, like, left to me before she passed. And that's why I've written every song I've ever written has been on that fucking guitar.
Right, yeah, because it was there. It was a tool.
Its neck is jacked up. It needs to be intonated. It's all this stuff. I don't think – I've even recorded a couple times. I think the last couple times I recorded with a different one or like, it was so out of tune. You're like, Nick, you got to just play on this one.
Right, for sure.
But the point is the songs were written and composed. Right. And it didn't need to be on a fucking – give me a random high-end acoustic guitar.
Well, I mean, you could have some. You're like, I can't wait until I have a crazy good Taylor Martin.
Sure.
To record.
But it doesn't have to be.
You got to get it out your system first.
Right.
You can always adjust and make it better.
So I take that point to take it to the next point, which is this. We don't need to worry about the flavor so much as the substance behind the flavor.
This is true, 100%.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And that, like I said, there's some people out there that are literally motivated to be able to make it happen with whatever they got. And
right.
Other people are just going to stand there with a thumb up their ass until someone buys them a better guitar or whatever it is. You know, I mean, I can only compare it to musical instruments because that's where I come from.
Right.
But I see it all the time.
Right.
And if you have an enthusiastic student, no matter what the age is, you know, and like they can't afford it, then you can't afford it, or someone's like, I'm not gonna fucking buy it for you.
Right.
You know, then you're like, all right, keep working at this shit. Don't be a little bitch about it.
Right.
You know, you can't tell 12 year olds that, but I kind of do. You know, I just
when you're teaching them.
Yes.
These are not random like 15, 12 year olds on the street. You're just
no, they're not. Them. I don't hunt the alleyways and the Burger Kings and all that good
not
stuff.
The Burger
yeah, King. Not the Arby's.
Hey, you want
you're
go
that
away?
Guy from Arby's, really?
We got the meats.
Exactly. Right. I like how you said meat.
Yeah.
And not meats.
Not meats.
Okay, that was good. I got the meat. I'm kind of a little bit of a Buffalo Bill kind of a situation.
Another
there.
Thing we've always appreciated together is not only just music, but like the sounds behind something, whether it be in a film or something. This is going to get more into like our brand kind of thing.
Yeah.
But like, welcome to hell. But like, I've always loved things like any kind of creature that has this kind of thing going on.
Tonight is the night.
You know?
You
get that.
Graveling.
Right. Yeah. It's good. It's really good.
Yeah, I mean, I could say, because most humans don't sound like
right,
that.
Right. Or like if they're transformed, they're like.
Yeah, kind of a thing. Yeah, exactly. And these are somebody sitting there at a fucking mixing board,
right,
pitching shit down. No. And the other guy's pushing the fucking thing.
It's all from the fucking.
And it comes right here. Right. And then you look at the footage.
You got a little bit of a fucking Godfather, Brando thing with that. It's a little bit of a Brando. A little Brando demon thing going on there.
All right. I'm going to get an ass.
Down the left.
I'm going to mop balls. I got a right there. But altering your voice and willing to come up with your own sound and go, wow, that doesn't sound, that's me, but it don't sound like me.
Right.
People don't follow that. And then the other end of it when it comes to anything, especially music, is you're going to try to sound like someone else.
Sometimes
good
the wife,
fucking luck with that.
Sometimes the wife has said flat out, because this is what she knows.
Yeah, and she knows you.
She knows. But she's like, I mean, you sound like Eddie Vedder when you sing. And I go, here's the deal. Because here's the deal. Here's the deal. Now, I love the Pearls jams.
Yeah, you know,
everybody knows this about me.
Right.
But because I love them so much, I know every single phase and era of his voice.
Right, yeah, sure.
I would love to sound like him in 1996. Mm-hmm. People hate that Vedder.
That particular.
But I love that No Code Vedder where he was hanging out with Neil Young a lot, and he did a lot of introspective, like, large fingers pushing pain. You know?
Yeah, for sure.
I love that shit. You know what I'm saying? And I can definitely hear some influences.
Yes.
But when I hear Side to Side, brother,
once
brother,
again, a lot of people will associate a vibe
right.
with something different. It's right. not the actual timbre of your voice.
Right.
I'm like, I don't sing like this. But they're like, oh, you sound like, oh, I've always been told I sound like Ozzy.
Really?
By people I won't name names, but people I trust that fucking can play better than me.
Wow.
And they're like, oh, you sound like Ozzy. And I'm like, I don't fucking sound like Ozzy. And then I go back and try to listen to anything ever, even background vocals. And I'm like, no. And I'm like, I guess it's the mid-range and the fact that my voice isn't like low. It's kind of in
me. Right. Because when I hear him, I think, this is so fucked up and sacrilegious, but I don't give a fuck. It's that kind of podcast.
Bring it. I love it.
I don't, when I hear him, I don't think about Black Sabbath.
Oh, just, okay,
I don't connect. I know he sang in Black Sabbath.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But that's not my first go-to. My first go-to is like every time I hear it's like, there are no unfathomable gods. There are no, because again, it goes back to being a kid, like we talked about.
And that was you.
Whatever
were like,
your first taste was, that was my first taste.
Yeah, I could hear that.
Because I didn't know. Like I'm in sixth grade. I was like, I don't know what the fuck Black Sabbath is.
Absolutely.
I just found out who Foo Fighters was.
Yeah, no, you know? I see what you're saying.
And
that.
I'm like, oh shit, that's that. And then I was like, wait, that's that guy. The Ozfest is that guy, and then this guy, and then.
It's the same thing. You meet people who don't know that they don't realize that Steven Tyler from the '90s on is the same guy who sung Dream On,
yeah.
And you're like, because his fucking voice changed.
And by the way, guilty as charged.
Oh, yeah, but...
Because I didn't realize it right away.
Because his voice changed. He was fucking 22
realized
years old.
Realized sooner than some of these other fucks.
A lot of drugs. A lot of shit went up his nose.
You hear a little bit of it with the...
It is,
but it still takes a second.
People
you
change.
Definitely don't hear it in the regular voice.
Say, if you're fucking 20, you're going to sound different when you're fucking 40.
Let's talk about another voice change. Uh-huh. One that I like a lot that we talked about at the top of the show or the top of the evening or the top of the time when I was at your driveway.
Top of the tip.
Sugar's climbing, had a banana, here we go. So, Scott Whelan.
Yep. Oh, God damn.
That's AIDS.
It came out.
That's AIDS.
Get it. Don't let it get in your mouth.
He probably had that too. Sorry.
Jesus Christ.
Rest in peace.
Yep.
Four pieces.
Yeah.
He sounded completely different on Core, even going into Purple. Although
absolutely.
I'll argue by the end of the Purple record, you kind of heard a little bit of his more nuances. But then I honestly believe he may or may not have forgotten either A, how to sing like that, or B, I would also argue now that I'm older and I look back at it through a different lens, I think maybe after going through rehab and all that shit, maybe he unlocked something.
Yes.
Because in Tiny Music, which happens to be, I think, my favorite STP record. I know it's a controversial record.
Right, but that's the one you dig. It's to your
the
heart.
Flow of it, the tone of the bass, those DeLeo brothers, Striking Gold, the fact that half the goddamn songs were supposed to be on a fucking talk show project, and they split literally 40 tracks down the middle, and they were like, these will be talk show songs, and these will be STP songs.
Gotcha.
It's just, what parallel universe somewhere else is Big Bang Theory a talk show song, you know? But Big Bang Theory? Jesus Christ. Big Bang Baby.
I like that, yeah. Oh. You lost a point, and he's going to gain it back by the end of the episode, guys. I tried to let that go.
I know, you did. You knew what I meant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It hurt. But.
I know, because we're never those type in here that go, well, actually.
Yeah. Right. You know, I knew what we were talking about.
Right.
Fuck yeah.
But I hear it. It's just like, it's just so like, I love that.
Yeah.
Like an adhesive. Don't even get me started on adhesive.
And from my little bit of interview reading and stuff with him, is that he was one to always lean upon his original influences. Where all the old
Bowie
rock, the Bowie, right. The Who, and
it's very experimental,
very like just old flavor rock.
Right.
So he's like, you can hear that. So he went back to the roots even more than what they were probably doing when they did Core and Purple, which was more like, just get it out your system. You're young. You're pissed right. off. But then he came back and it's like, let's try to get my shit together and be more introspective and listen to these old school cats. So I could hear that in there.
It's, you know, a very interesting band because they've changed like every single record. It was like, yeah, so different.
Yeah.
And not a lot of bands can say that. Like, no. Core is very like, people love the Core. A lot of metalheads love Core because Core was pretty fucking heavy.
Right. And it fit the band at the time. The production fit the band. And he was Brendan O'Brien. I'm speaking. Sorry. Yeah, I'm using terms. Right. The producer. He was able to go, okay, this is y'all's strength. Right. I'm going to play upon your strength, which was muscly. It was more muscle bound.
Thick, girthy. Thick, girthy. Large cock.
Yeah. A lot of veins. I was going to say the veins.
We can't say girthy and not talk about cocks, right?
No, I guess not. Yeah, it's definitely a subject that seems to come up, you know.
Ooh.
Oh,
did it. I see what.
All right, I'm completely out of puns at this point.
No, you're not running dry.
Not at all.
Not if I have anything to do with it.
Exactly. But no, it is true though. People, especially vocalists, will change every time, and they will change their timbre and their vibe and their whole approach. And sometimes it may even be a physical situation. Like, they literally, their voice is getting worn out. They're doing hardcore drugs. They're not doing hardcore drugs anymore. Right. My favorite Ozzy Osbourne performance, album-wise, was well known for being him at his absolute most fucking out of his mind. And he even said himself, when he goes back and listens to Sabotage by Black Sabbath, that he's like, I have no fucking clue I hit those. I know how I did. I was out of my fucking mind. And when you listen to it and you're like, oh shit, like he never hit anything higher than that and screamed actually.
Never has
like,
he ever.
Yeah! Like doing that and you're like, whoa. And you go back, I'm like, oh, man, listen to it. Go ahead. 1976, Sabotage.
Right.
You know, and he. So when he goes back and goes like, yeah, I'm not hitting that.
Right.
And he was like, yeah, I'm going to die if I hit that again. So
what the fuck is the name of that song again?
Symptom of the Universe.
That's what I thought. Yeah, that's what I fucking thought.
And that's like the hit.
What a great fucking song.
It's a great song.
That was probably the second song that introduced me to Ozzy.
And it's cool because that song is gnarly, but that album, it's the same thing. You listen to him from the album before, and then you listen to the 80s and to the 90s.
Right.
Like you said, his voice changed. Not only the song structure changed, but he wasn't doing the same things to achieve the same things anymore. And he grew and he changed, you know. And some vocalists try to latch on to the same shit. But Scott Weiland did a great job of being able to flow with the evolution of the band, having such strong songwriters. And from what I watched...
Those brothers.
Yeah, when I watched the Robert interview with Rick Beato, it was great.
Oh, great, so right? Great. How he Rick's broke down that Interstate Love Song shit?
The whole thing, but his whole point was that they didn't force melodies onto Scott. Scott had to feel... Even if they collaborated on lyrics, like he had to make sure he felt the melody and it had to work for him.
Right.
And that's why it sounds good on the records, because they weren't like, hey, dude, go. Ooh.
And when they would do these stripped down shows on Howard Stern or like even the old MTV Unplugged.
Oh, yeah, they did
Unplugged,
a bunch of those too, yeah.
It just worked. Yeah. It broke down. It was a heavy influence on me and a mutual friend of ours, Mike, when we would write stuff for vinyl. Very big influence, which was great. The great thing about Mike was that he had the pocket, the eclectic taste, much like you do in terms of like knowing a lot of different metal.
Right.
And knowing he wanted to write faster, punkier stuff and metal stuff, but at the same time he had that basis in like the STP and the classic songwriting too.
You gotta have something memorable. You gotta have something to latch on.
And he would put that spin on some of that. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
And also seeing a band that is used to for this big, overblown, monstrous, muscular production go into a basic setup.
Right.
In a 1996 Howard Stern studio.
Right.
And still do a kick ass
with a
fucking
the goddamn bottle as the goddamn.
Oh, I remember that. And he's like, dude, I don't have a slide.
I don't have
he's
a slide,
like,
bro.
Man, hook him up. And he's like, he'll make it happen. And he killed it.
He killed it. Of course
but
he did.
But I'm sure everybody's like, oh, he was probably nervous wreck sitting there.
Right.
Going like, fuck.
Because it's like, especially on a radio program like that.
Yeah, it's not. All, it's like, didn't sound
it's
good.
So sterile.
It probably sounded like normal. Through the headphones.
Because I notice nowadays, like if you watch, now they have a lot more tools they can use.
Yeah, they can just make
and they
it
reverb
sound
the fuck out of
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, yeah.
But back then, It was very like dry. This is it.
The point. Yeah, exactly.
There's a mic here.
Dancing Days right here again.
And you're not like, can I get some more delay? They're
can
like,
I get some reverb?
Fucking right. Just get this some guy some more heroin right. And he'll be right. Fine.
Get this guy some more.
Gank this guy up again. It'll be good. It'll
back
be
up. Fine. Did you say gank this guy up again?
Gank this guy up again.
Oh, I thought you said gank the sky. Like that could be like a gank the sky.
Gank the sky. There's a great King's X song called Black the Sky.
Oh, Black the Sky.
Black the Sky.
Ooh. Let's talk about King's X for a second.
Oh, God, Jesus.
Is it Doug Pinnock? Doug Pinnock?
Doug Pinnock, yeah, D-U-G.
Saw him with Trace Mountains.
Oh, wow.
At Black Cat when I was
drinking. What? Drinking.
Partying, having a good time, and you got to see... 90s,
new metal.
Fucking got to see fucking Doug Pinnock.
Him and Jeff Ament on the stage.
That's right.
With Mike McCready, who I, unbeknownst to me and the Super Friends, was just showing up there to play lead at the show.
I had to say, he's like,
so he melted all our faces, and I'm like, that's the closest I ever got. That's the closest I ever got to any Pearl Jam member, because it was like right there at the Black Cat.
Right, yeah, it was a real deal, normal, you know, normal right. Venue. Right.
And then Doug Pinnock was just like, oh, his voice, man.
Yeah, man. Even on a voice. Bad night, Doug's great. He's an insane singer. He's one of my
because he's favorites. Got that. I don't think this is racist to say. He's got that natural like tremolo that a and baritone vibrato that a no, strong he, black man would
he
have.
No, he grew up in the
you
church. Know,
right.
You know, he's raised by his grandma. Right. He grew up in a Christian, all the time going to church.
Right.
So core and. He's got singing that, loud
oh, just that,
was
that,
a
that
part of his upbringing. So
honey that, drizzle on the record, you know what I'm saying?
One of the most humble things I've always or been humbled by is, once again, not naming names, but a really good friend of mine told me that I sounded, reminded me of
so I was going to say, I was going to say, yeah. You have, like, especially with some of the backup highs, I see Doug Pinnock. I see,
and
I hear King's X.
We all know how
especially that
fucking,
song. What the fuck is he?
Doug is
that
just,
shit. Oh, dude.
It's crazy because when you hear guys like him and he's on a Cornell
right.
level, it's like
right.
them singing high, that's their normal.
Right.
So when you hear him, he's like, oh, I'm going to go a little higher now. And I'm like, you got more?
Right.
You can keep you going more. Up? Jesus right. H. Christ, you know?
And I don't know what's better sometimes when they would just do that low end thing, you know?
Well, he'd all, like, it's just his, yeah, it's just the quality of his.
Because really, like, because was that a three piece?
Yes.
King's has a fucking three piece.
Still performing.
What is it about stage? A goddamn three piece that impresses the fuck out of you?
Because you have a band. Because
it's three that, motherfuckers.
Yeah, it's just, well, they also had a thing where they could create a consistent, coming from someone who played a mm-hmm. three piece, Pat and Dave, you know? And
right.
it's different.
You had a solid lead on that
but
one.
But you're not having this doubled guitar thing. You've
right.
got to figure out how to make the space expand.
Right. You can't be soloing the whole fucking time.
Yeah, and then with that band.
The bass
too,
has to kind of carry the rhythm.
Right.
But it's also fun when they start noodling.
Yeah, and his
you're a pretty busy drummer. I'm going to keep interrupting you. Well, you're a pretty busy drummer.
I'm a busy everything.
But you know when to play in the pocket.
Well, with the right song, yeah.
Right.
You know, you write it for that if
right.
it works for those things. But that band also is their biggest influence is Beatles.
Right.
So all three of them can sing really good. So everything is harmony.
I did not.
So
I drummer, said right, but I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know Beatles was. I mean, I guess a lot of people cite the Beatles.
Well, of course. But if you go back and you listen, because everything in their music has background vocals.
Oh.
Even on everything has background vocals, and it's not Doug. It's Ty Tabor and Jerry Gaskell's the drummer.
Aren't those just great, like, band
they are.
Band
Ty
member
names? Well, Ty Tabor, that name's always been
like,
rad.
Ty
and that's
Tabor.
His real name is Ty.
Ty Tabor.
Yeah, right?
No, he's going to be in a band.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you know
yeah,
what I'm saying?
He was born to be in a
right.
fucking rock band.
Right.
But bands like that know how to work together, and you got to think, how many times have they played together? I mean, that band, I think, formed in 80
right.
or 81.
Just about as long as fucking Green Day.
Yeah,
another
so,
great three-piece.
There
you know?
You go.
I mean, they got super commercialized and stuff, but for them to play together as long as they played.
Any band that's a three-piece, let's just go down to it. The best band, one of the best bands of all time, if not, I'm not going to say the best. There's no best band. Ultimate three-piece, don't give a shit, Rush.
Well, yeah.
So when you think.
Musicality-wise.
Right. Well, just period. Being able to have a working.
Originality-wise.
A working unit that works and creates that much sound.
Still can't listen to an entire discography.
No, for sure. It's not
But
for
it's
everybody.
A mood.
Right.
Right? But you can still throw the fuck down. Is Dream Theater a fucking three-piece?
Oh, God, no. No. But
well, no, not. I mean on the sense, stage. On the
yes,
stage.
Guitar player, bass player, drummer.
Right. But obviously. But, yeah. Oh, keyboardist.
No two,
that's right.
No two guitar.
Your boy's yeah. back.
Oh,
or is
God.
That old? Is that old news?
Oh yeah, it's old news, but it's great news.
Yeah.
They're in the studio, Dream Theater. It is Mike Portnoy came
right,
back.
Right, Mike Portnoy.
They've been working on it for a little bit now, a couple like a month
right.
over. So everybody's excited about that. They have a really cool opportunity to really, really like make this chapter something special. It's a band that when you have so much going on, if even if you took the vocals away, that they kind of like, they run out of ideas, but they don't run out of ideas. So when you hear the OG dude who really was the one that was making it.
Right.
And he was like, it's almost kind of like Joe Walsh and the Eagles. He brought the balls. What is it?
People love that Joe Walsh.
Because Joe
Walsh. They can't get enough of him in his brick suit.
He just didn't fuck around. He was the one. He had a mustache. You remember the double guitar?
You remember the trade-off scene, like the live version of fucking Hotel California? And he does that fucking trade-off.
You know where that main
video. He's got the double neck.
You know where the main video of all that footage came from? It was recorded live at the Capitol Center.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
The Capitol Center?
Yeah, the one close to us. Okay. It's crazy. It's fucking bad.
The center in the Capitol.
Yes, okay. Right dead center. Right? It was like
in our nation's capital.
Peter North.
Right.
Right straight ahead.
45, 50 minutes away, no traffic.
But yeah, being in a three-piece band and being able to create that sound, even come back to Stone Temple Pilots to kind of wrap this up in a sense. Three-piece band with the vocals, you don't have that extra addition of harmony, so you have to make yourself committed to having a vibe and a sound as a vocalist.
Right.
As opposed to being the same old, same old. That's why heavy music, certain bands just go right through your fingers because they kind of sound like the same thing.
Right.
And there's vocalists who sing clean like that too. But then people who have that character, they stand out and you remember it. Even if it's to someone else, it's like weird. I'm like, that motherfucker sounds different. He sounds like a fucking monster from hell.
Right.
You know, and everybody else is just normal. So.
Well, there was like that weird stage of like, I think it was like the post-grunge shit where, you know, where some of those like Seattle bands are starting to get a little bit more notoriety. Like, you know, President of the United States came out as a three-piece and it was like, you know, and the weird guitar tunings, missing strings, you know, shit like that. And then what's the other guy? Fucking, what the fuck is it? When not the fuck? Ah, oh, the fuck. She gave me the fuck. Oh, she gave me the car. She gave me the. She gave me her car. What the fuck? Fled by the ocean. Watch the world die. We got to live. There we go. There we go. Yeah. There we go. So apparently he was like a big, like Rush fan.
Okay. Yeah, I could see that. Yeah. Well, it's the same thing with Billy Corgan. Billy Corgan was like into that shit.
Right.
He was into playing and having chops.
What's up with that grouchy Billy? How come he doesn't like anybody?
I don't know.
Doesn't like anybody. He goes on Rogan, and by the way, fuck Rogan. I'm going to say it right here. Fuck that guy.
No, God. Anyway.
Our podcast is so popular that it's going to matter, right?
No, people exactly, are going to listen to it. Yeah, that's it. Canceled. I don't know. Billy's one of those dudes, man, that it's just like, he goes over that line of being a little too full of himself, then you're like, hey, right, buddy. Right. But at the same time, he can be very honest and it can be dead on the money.
Right.
From a perspective of someone who actually
I'm sure he's got lived. Experiences.
Well, I mean, he's been there, done that.
You know what I'm saying? They've been around almost longer than a lot of the other contemporary bands
that
we grew up.
And he was also, you talk about songs and development. I mean, he was one of those dudes. I mean, he worked his ass off on his songs.
Love that drop C.
You know, and he just... he had a vision and he had control. By God, he did.
By God, he had control.
And I don't blame him for that. People bitch about that, but I'm like...
But I don't like the naysaying. I don't like you getting to this point in your age where you look back fondly. I hope I never turn out like that, where I look back at my past and go, whether it's, you know, whatever, a relationship. Because honestly, I think for me, it's the opposite. The older I got, I look back on stuff that maybe I had resentments on. I tend to kind of let those resentments go or worked them out or you know, forgiven the... whatever kind of person I thought or perceived transgressed against me. That's the hope I would have that when I leave, when I shift off this mortal coil, I leave knowing...
Not a bitter
prick. The guy is touring, has money. People do look up to him.
Right,
he saved a lot of goth kids. Yeah. You know, he saved kids that thought they were going to be goth kids like myself. I mean, I remember when Melancholy came out.
Absolutely.
And it was a fucking snowstorm. And I stayed inside listening to that bitch. And it was great. Double tapes. That's right before the CDs.
Yeah, about to say.
And big budget
stuff.
You know,
boys.
And it was solid all the way through. Even the songs that you would write off nowadays is like, oh, that was a filler song, which by the way, it was a filler song. But it worked in the frame of what they were doing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But still, you hear him now on Rogan. Fuck that guy, Rogan. And then you hear him talking, and you're like, bro, what are you so mad about, man?
Mm-hmm.
You don't like the guys in Pearl Jam? You don't like the guys in Foo Fighters? What, they're too big, they're too rock, they're too... And maybe they are. They probably are. By the way, fuck Pearl Jam for charging way too much for their tickets. No resentments. But I'm just saying, like, it's just weird, like, to get to that point where you get, like, you know, come on, settle down a little bit.
He probably, most likely, there's a certain core of us that's always the same. He probably was always a little bit like...
He's probably a little bit, yeah.
You know, but also that tension in him being a little shitty probably... made him motivated. I'm going to write a better song.
Right.
And when he nailed it, he's one of those dudes. When he's on, he's on.
Right.
But you can still be a fucking great songwriter and be a prick.
I mean, we liked some of the Swan stuff.
Jesus. So no, I genuinely love some Smashing Pumpkins.
Yeah, me too.
You can also be one of those people. He can turn you off.
But also, like Smashing Pumpkins, don't like just Billy Corgan.
Oh, of course.
Because let's be honest, dude. Jimmy Chamberlain?
That was the thing.
He fucking made that record.
Absolutely. Well, he made that record. He made the records, period, when they could keep him in the studio and not shooting up in the alleyway, you know?
Well, okay. I don't know why I'm laughing. Yeah, it's horrible.
It's great. But the whole point is that they were the Smashing Pumpkins. And then, you know, like it weren't for those core of those two dudes. But James and, Darcy, I guess.
Yeah, no. Well, sure. God bless her. Who's the girl from Hole joined? Melissa Dinofer or whatever the fuck?
Yeah. I think she was the one who kind of came in and was doing that for a while.
Yeah, the misogynist anarchist or something like that?
Yeah, she actually has great background vocals.
She does. Yeah, she did a little backup for the Perfect Circle for a little bit there. And Paz, what's her name? Paz on the fucking... This is what the show's going to be tonight, kids. We're just going to fucking...
We're all over the place.
Two dudes that are just like, remember Berries?
Yeah, I was going to say the Berries.
Remember that band?
Sweet the Juice. Sweet the Juice.
That was good. That was so good.
Yeah. But I mean, they're just one of those bands where you're going to have to kind of take the good with the bad.
It sucks getting old in a way when you grow up listening to stuff because, you know, music is not like movies in the sense that, like, I can watch a movie now that I watched as a kid. It might not be the same. I might still like it or I might be disappointed, but a song, like a really good song or a good album, I remember where I was when I heard it. It takes you right back to that fucking moment. And so, like, now, when you're looking up tickets for some of these bands that you grew up listening to, and maybe you got a chance to see if you were lucky, like in high school or out of high school, and now these tickets are fucking insane.
Everything's insane, even
Milk.
Yeah, I have to say, like,
but it's kind of heartbreaking because you're like, wait, no, but you were supposed to be the band that was like against all that. Absolutely. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, and it's just a different time in life. Not that it's a good thing necessarily,
right?
But it is disappointing when it seems out of reach,
right?
And you're like, wait, didn't you like boycott Ticketmaster in '94, man? Come on, man. You know, come on.
But then you also get to an age where you're just like, well, I just don't give a fuck,
right?
Because I can still listen to like those records and it doesn't change anything.
Well, your heart's gonna be where you got it from in the first place.
Right.
There's bands that I could probably seek out to go see a little bit more, and that's my own fault. But in the same thing, it doesn't mean it's gonna take away from what that band did for me, and I still listen to it, and it still is important to me now.
Right.
I still jam just as hard.
Right.
You know? But yeah, it does suck when shit costs like fucking $100 to just go see a basic show. I'm supposed to go see Steve Vai and Joe Satriani in Richmond on like the 3rd of April, but we haven't looked up the ticket prices, but they're not, I think they're like $45, $50, which
is amazing.
Like, oh shit. But you know, it's okay for that. It's, you know, you're going to get your money's worth, but you look back and literally,
it's not $800 for like mid-range tickets in Super Bowl USA.
I have a little thing right outside the studio you've seen before that my aunt gave to me probably 15 years ago that has all her old ticket stuff that she kept.
Oh, that's, I love that.
And I happen to be looking at it with two recording clients that were at the studio earlier who were 26 and 31, so a little younger.
Right, right.
But they're looking at it and they're like, oh shit, 1981, Rainbow Live, oh shit, you know, like...
Damn.
Doobie Brothers, 1972,
dude,
live.
I know, I've seen
for like $4.50.
Isn't that
wild? But it was a different time, you know.
I remember getting a Pearl Jam ticket in 1996 for fucking $20.
Yeah. I mean, I remember when it was like, when it cost $40 before I was 18 to go to a show, my parents were like, fuck.
Yeah.
Fuck. Like, you're going to go halfsy on this or something. It was like buying like a wrestling pay-per-view back in the day. Like, $60 in like 1998. Like, they were making bank, bro.
Right,
you know? Raping all those
Christians.
Yeah,
wait, rape what them good. The fuck?
Rape them good.
Rape
Sorry about that,
good,
guys.
Good. Violent.
But yeah, man, I mean, you got to take the good with the bad, especially with artists. There's going to be people who are going to have a weird disposition. But that tension helps create the art that they create. But it still doesn't make them an excuse to not be a prick. The word pricks come up several times tonight.
I've always tried to be a non-prick.
For sure.
But I've had prick moments. And, you know, especially
ego's
when you're...
Ego's part of the human experience.
When you're in a room with people, like, it's like there's these personalities. And sometimes when you leave said group, like, and you know, I've talked about it sometimes with Jen and, you know, even a guy in my program... who's also a musician, but I'm not going to break his anonymity.
Yeah.
But Enzo's in the program with
me.
Yeah,
he digs that. Yeah.
And we talk on each. We talk about it. That shit. He's a little older than me. He's played in bands all throughout his life. I played in bands most of my life. You know, and we both agree. We both get it that when you leave a band, especially if you've been in that band, you're writing material, you're bonding, you're doing
working
this,
hard,
and
yeah.
you leave that band, it's like a fucking breakup.
Uh-huh.
It's like breaking up with a fucking chick,
yeah.
and it's crazy. Or a dude, let's not be biased, 2024.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But it's something you can't quite explain to people unless they've gone through it.
No.
Kind of thing, unless they've been in it. Because if somebody be like, well, just fucking leave the band. What's the big deal?
Right.
No, you don't understand.
No. And
you know, I'm just like.
I remember in movies and documentaries, they would always say it's like being in a band's like being married to three people,
right.
two people, whatever it is. And it is true because, I mean, especially when you're younger, I mean, you're so. You're a one track mind. You're trying to be on the same page. You're trying to have this amazing mission, and then all of a sudden it's like, I don't want to give up on this. But then
right.
you know, it's like, fuck.
Right.
You know, and of course my experience with relationships was more coming from bands than dating.
Right.
Women.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like I was just like, oh.
By the time you got to women, you're like, oh, this is cake.
Yeah. Kind of. Sure. Right. Yeah. We'll go with that. Right. But at the same time, it is true because you have to balance that, and people are like, oh, it's just this let go. You're good.
Right.
And you're like, yeah, I've invested like hundreds and hundreds and thousands of hours into this
right.
project, and sucks.
And you want it to be fun, but you know there's work at it.
Yeah,
right,
there's
nothing work involved.
Comes easy, yeah,
right? Exactly, but yeah. but you also want it to be fun. My whole approach with it was always like, if it's not fun anymore, I can't do it. That doesn't mean it's not supposed to be work.
For sure.
But if it's not fulfilling something else in there, if it feels like
if it's more bad than good, then
right,
it's time to
it's
start.
Time to and you know we've all had those relationships where sometimes you got to get out of a bad relationship because it's like toxic and everyone's like, Jesus Christ, she's fucking crazy. And then you're like, nah, dude, but like, no one's going to love me because I'm a piece of shit.
Or there could be other reasons. I mean, when I left the last band I was in, albeit it was just not an original act, but I was making the best money I've ever made as a musician.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I was making, you know, a lot of money.
Right.
$100
I saw you play. You guys had a good thing
$100
going.
An hour to be a musician, but then all of a sudden you're like, I'm out here playing 40, 50 songs that I really don't give a fuck about anymore.
Mm.
And I'm tired of dealing with these people who are on the same page with me, but that's their vision.
Right.
That's their thing. So why, who am I to hold it
who
back?
Who you, yeah.
You know, and a little ego comes into play with that, but also it comes from being in a band and used to writing original music and having your input be equal. Well, when you're playing someone else's song, you're pretty much just trying to emulate it to satisfy the people, which is cool because you want everybody to have a good time, right? As a performer.
Yeah, you do.
But if it starts good, the bad outweighs the good, then you know, it's time to step away as hard as it is. And it's true, especially with that situation for me personally.
I sometimes wonder if I should have been, this is something I've never told you, but I think I sometimes wonder if I should have been a little bit more Corgan because I've always been like a...
Oh, in your band.
Right,
when you were, because you were the vocalist, you're the lead singer of the fucking group.
My wife would always say, you're the peacemaker, you always try to be, you know.
Right.
And I'd always try to get everybody to just get along, you know what I'm saying, and do that kind of thing and try to be amenable to stuff. And of course, that was also, I created my own drama when I, you know, being a raging a fucking alcoholic.
Of course, right. But everybody's going through their thing, but you're trying to
It also
to
helped
balance.
Being in a band with other people that were all that would drink alcoholically with me, even if they weren't real true alcoholics.
Right, but you're trying to balance all of these things and these egos and this work and these songs and trying
right.
to make sure like look, we this has worked before.
And I think sometimes I should have maybe been a little bit more blunt or forward with mm-hmm. how I felt about shit.
Absolutely.
And because then what ended up happening, I think, in past relationships was, when I look back on it through a different lens now, it's like, oh, I didn't come forward with any of that shit. So then when I just kind of sprung it out later and it, or I let it brim to the top and then pop and explode.
Fuck it.
Then it's like, oh shit, we didn't know you felt that way.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And I think back on that now, it's like, that's really probably what that was. But at the time you're like, no, I just want everybody to be cool with each other.
Yeah. And a lot of times
friends.
Musically too, when you're depending on the project and the style,
you're
trying to make sure that you can get your input in, but you want to make sure that everybody else is satisfied
right.
too. As a vocalist, that's hard, especially. But then you end up going so down, yeah, I'm going to do what I want to do the way I want to do it.
And then it goes ego,
it goes.
Prick. He's
and then
a prick.
Everybody
He's
is, but
prick.
Everybody's doing that,
right.
you know. And then, of course, when you're having everybody tell you your part should change, or you should do this, or you should do that, and I'm like, get the fuck out of here.
Right.
Different if you're playing something like your music was very based around the songs and the vocal medleys with a little bit of flash because the players were good.
Right.
But it was like a balance and they were supposed to be a little rough around the edges.
Yeah.
But for me, it was different because it was like I just wanted to make sure that I got my voice heard on an instrument, regardless of how maybe it affected the song.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, it's just this big mishmash of what everybody wants. And you go back and listen to it and you're like, that's a lot. Everybody just piled all of their stuff into one thing and said, well, here we go.
I think that's to be expected with a lot of like younger bands, too.
For sure.
Because everybody wants to turn up all the way.
Yes.
And everybody wants to be heard all the way. And then sometimes you have to like let go and let other people have the right of way.
It's all about the space. And even if you have the knowledge of that and you know how to improvise and jam and listen to people, it ends up not coming out like that. And if you play a busier style of music, of course, there's less space.
Right.
So you're like, I'm going to be heard by God.
Right.
And I'm not going to play your part, you know. And I was in a band at one point when I played bass where the guitar player was much more natural, Andy, that is, of... just he could come out with riff after riff and he would kind of maintain, okay, this riff could be improved better. Where I'd work so hard on one thing that he'd have like five riffs for every one that I had.
Right.
So he's beating me on the songwriting front. So what's the trade off there? Well, I'm not going to play your riff. I'm going to play something different.
Right.
And all of a sudden you listen to music and you're like, fuck, everybody's doing something different. Work sometimes.
Maybe I should have done a little bit more
for the group.
For the group.
For the song.
For the song. The song. Play for the song, not for the individual.
Right, yeah. And even though the music allowed for that busyness and that player and that musicianship, you couldn't get away with that in another style. But then everybody wants to have their hand in the cookie jar and go, well, I think the vocals could go like this or they could go like that. Okay, you fucking sing it then.
Right.
And then when you finally say that, everybody's like, oh, shit. Okay, then.
Right.
It's like, you guys have been arguing over the riff all fucking night long, and I finally say that my vocal, I got an idea, I feel strong about it, and they're like, well, it could go like this. It could go a lot of fucking ways.
But that goes to play devil's advocate. Yeah. Sometimes I feel like I wish I might have should have been maybe more devil's advocate with some of that shit too.
Yeah.
Because, or more perfectionist with that shit too. Because, yeah, I remember there was plenty of times where I would just write something or like have it, and we'd hear it and be the finished thing, and be like, one take, Stevens, and be like, all right, we're done, it's out, it's in the can.
Right.
It's like, wait a minute, no, hold on, do another pass.
For sure.
Try something out. Take your top off, unzip your pants.
Yeah.
Maybe, let's
see what happens. Worst case, we got what we got already.
100%. Yeah. One of the things I love about recording with you is that we'll do a pass, we'll do a couple passes, we'll do some things, we're pretty flexible with shit, and if something just didn't work, it didn't work, but you'll say, well, maybe do another pass, or you'll say, like, you know what, you've just blown out your voice.
Yeah, no, there's so a let's balance, just especially fucking, with vocalists. Yeah, exactly.
Right, you know what I'm saying? Because when you're doing...
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, shit. Let's do one more time. Okay.
But it's true, though. I mean, with a vocalist, your instrument is a machine. It's your voice.
Right.
So if you fuck it up, then
it's your voice.
Then everybody's fucked, pretty much.
Everyone's fucked.
And I was taught by someone who actually used to get paid seriously to make big budget records.
Buco money.
And you had to look out for that because literally, you know, Ken was like, back in the day, the A&R guy would call like at 12 and go, how's it going? And then he'd be like, all right, it's going pretty good. She or she's having a good day, you know, like they're going pretty good. And they're like, all right. And they call it like 6, you know, because this was before Skype and it was just landline.
Right.
And it would be like that. And then you'd be like, hey, like they're kind of arguing, like the person's irritable. They're not having recorded a lot. And they're like, well, this is costing us like literally like $500 an hour.
Which, by the way,
to do this,
which, by the way, that brings up a great point. Why the fuck did it? Let's be completely real with me if I'm being asinine. Why the fuck did it really cost $500 an hour? Come on.
The best explanation I've seen of this in a long time, to reference Rick Beato again, because he's so great. He has an interview with a guy who was an A&R dude for, I think it was Capitol, and he explains everything. See, back in the day, it got to a point to where the budgets were beefier because they were willing to invest in a band.
So what is that? Like
so
like,
they would say, hey, like it's gonna cost
for just renting out the studio?
$3,000, $4,000, $5,000
because somebody owned it?
Just the studio. So you gotta have a safe space.
Right,
so
but I mean
record.
Why does it be so astronomically high? Why wouldn't they just pursue smaller studios? Or was it Was it just because not as many people had studios then? It was
well, like because a, you had to have real shit. Like, you couldn't
because just, we were doing, like, tape-to-tape shit.
Yeah, nobody was doing podunk shit. You had a real console. You
no
you
fucking, none app. Of this. No you, Pro
this
Tools.
This didn't exist.
Right.
Before, and this is right. a 14-year-old setup.
So now that this is, like, existing with the digital setup. And
absolutely.
Like, and everyone's fucking
everybody's a laptop producer.
Everybody.
And they think they are
does
great.
That grind your gears sometimes?
It does in the sense, but it's been like that for a long time.
Without being the grouchy old guy. Like
No. It's just like...
Not that you are.
It's just like artists are now with AI. Oh, this isn't fair. No, it's 100% not fair. Welcome to the fucking club.
Right.
What do you think happened when Pro Tools came out? With anything came out, you could augment stuff.
You could auto-tune shit. Now you can do auto-tuning live, apparently?
Yeah, it's got... Well, they got it to the point where it's accurate, depending on what you're singing.
Jesus Christ.
But the whole point was that you're trying to get the best product as quickly as you can.
Right.
But you're also not going to... In the old days, they needed a good product because that's what's going to fucking pay everybody.
Right.
But everybody wanted a piece of the pie. That's what ruined it all. And that interview really explains it really, really well because it became, you know, like...
I like that guy's YouTube channel, by the way. I've been saying Beato for years. I didn't know it was Beato.
I think that's how you say it. It's just because it's when he says it. But the only thing is that he is one of the very few... He's one of the rarest motherfuckers because he's been there, done that, and he's doing it for the right reasons. So the truth comes out naturally. So that's why his interviews are off the fucking chain and they just... out of control.
I love his session with Matt Cameron where he's like getting into the fucking spiels and some of the... I mean, look, before he fucking joined Pearl Jam, I mean, you can check your records, check my record. I have a pretty immaculate record. He's always been one of my favorites. His style, his approach to music.
Some of my fellow musicians, that was their drummer. That was my reference point from Dave at all times was just the Matt Cameron shit down, bro.
you're good. Just sprinkle a little fucking
just
Matt Cameron.
Just a Matt Cameron, bro.
Right, just MC that shit.
Exactly. Yeah.
But that session's really good because it's very natural, breaking down the structure of a song, how he wrote a song and stuff like that. He
starts talking about Wooden Jesus.
Crazy.
And when you're a drummer, historian, and practitioner like myself, then you go,
50 ways to leave your lover, then, kids. If you don't know your googs.
And then you go back and you go, well, duh. And you got to think about his age. Well, I don't get it. He's 60 now.
Right.
So when he was 20, that was the shit.
By the way, he grew up listening to that shit.
And that was what he was. That's why his musicality came through so good in the group. And my favorite part of that whole interview was about him saying that because Chris was such a good drummer and was the original drummer of Soundgarden.
Which I didn't know for the longest time. I only found that out of a couple of years back.
Yeah. And then you see random pictures of him sitting at a drum set. Like,
what the fuck?
Yeah. No, he's a good drummer because he said, he's like, I can't think
of... He would do all the drumming on the demos.
Yeah, and Matt said he honestly couldn't think of really one time ever where Chris was like, I really want you to play this. He said if it was a demo...
He never gave him notes.
He would learn the parts.
Right.
But he said anytime they really worked it out, he said he pretty much just... He never said anything.
And
but
he almost
he
seemed.
Him. He said, "I know you're gonna. I like what you do. You're gonna do it."
He looked back on that fondly, but he also seemed like he said it very like, "No, actually,
like
almost like the way he said it to me, how I took it, like he wouldn't have minded getting some feedback."
No,
from
for
him.
Sure, he was looking back now. He's in that humble situation everything that's happened. He's like, "Wow, like that dude, like let me do my thing,
right?"
And had he not, then everything would have been completely different. And that tension and that. Opposite of tension,
right?
Like that, when you get along with someone like that and you just speak the same language, then you're able to really let it flow. I mean, you're working your ass off at it, but it's completely different. It's the same thing. I mean, when I was playing in Great Magnet, all that stuff with Andy for all those years, Green Steel, depending on what era you're about the band that nobody knows. But when I was doing that, me and my drummer were always so on the same page about stylistic stuff that we kind of knew how to do it. And it worked because it was a busy style. So you're able to pull from that. But
It help too, like if you have a little bit of a connection over other stuff outside of music, like you both could sit down and talk about Predator.
Yeah, you got to be buds. You know? First, you got to get it. Yeah, no, for
like,
sure.
I think that does help.
That comes back to the marriage thing we started talking about. This is that, you know, like opposites attract, but you have to have common ground with your significant other.
Right.
No matter they are. So like they might make fun of you for liking a certain thing, but like, okay, I get why you like it. And it's
cool. 100%.
Know?
Everybody knows I'm the comic guy coming into the band. I'm the comic nerd guy. But there's always a love for some of that weird shit that we both, there's some cross-pollination.
Yeah, the crossover.
You know, you love the horror stuff. It definitely cross-pollinates with the sci-fi nerd shit.
Yeah,
you know,
and it's the same thing. I had a conversation with a brand new student who's about 5 years older than me, and she grew up being like kind of like an Asian hip-hop girl, so she's all over the place with stuff. Wow. And now she wants to learn acoustic guitar, right? You know?
Wow.
So I'm teaching her, no diggity, I got bad up, babe. So there's a bunch of versions acoustically for that. So I'm teaching her that. It's the first song she's going to learn.
I wonder
so.
If she's going to learn any fucking old school, like, unplugged Lauryn Hill shit.
Anything. You know? The whole point is that you can transpose those songs. That
because that would be, you know, the rap, the bridge to the rap and the acoustic.
Yeah, and it is the vibe, the groove, the song.
You know, the songsmanship.
But she sees my shirts because they wear the same shit, and she's like, "So you're into all that crazy stuff?" And I told her, "I said,
into that crazy stuff.
You know,
he's wearing a Halloween shirt."
Yeah, yeah, exactly, Halloween, right? But she's like, "I never could watch them because they'd freak me out." But the whole point, I said,
"It is freaky."
And I told him, "I said, I don't sit and watch horror movies all the time. Now, it's not at all. The whole point is, I like the vibe, I like the look, I like the campiness, I like the colors, I like the brightness. It's all a factor that comes into play.
Right.
So when you meet people and you're
sitting in a room right now that has like neon colors, neon lights.
Yeah,
you
the
know.
Whole vibe. It's just natural stuff. There's going to be bright orange and neon green.
Right.
And it's just part of who we are.
Ever since that Predator blood, right?
KY jelly and glow sticks.
You're goddamn right.
Fucking Stan Winston was like, I got an idea.
Stan Winston, if you don't know your googs.
Yeah, to say, and they're like, oh shit, that worked out. Now all the CGI stuff, they do okay with it. But I want KY and glow stick.
Have you seen that new Crow trailer?
I've seen people make fun of it.
It's kind of...
It's very bad. It's very sad.
It's sad because it... On paper, just looking at it, it looks like it might actually be good as a movie.
Right, so did the Edward Furlong one.
But don't call it The Crow.
Right, exactly. Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Even though it's like, you know, The Crow.
Yeah, that one's a tough one. Especially
I can't believe you went to the Edward Furlong one because he was...
It's so bad. It's so bad.
It's got. I think that one had Tara Reid and Edward Furlong was like 200 pounds.
It's a bad situation. All around.
Yeah, it's not good.
But the whole point is that people are going to try to beat that horse dead. They're trying to milk it dry.
Right.
And fuck that. And it's crazy to think 30 years ago.
30 years ago.
30 years ago for Crow.
My dad took me to that movie.
And not only the soundtrack, but poor old Brandon Lee.
This is it.
The motherfucker was 28.
28.
I'll be 36 in August.
Catching
and
a bullet.
And you'll be how old?
41 in May.
42
in May.
My mother didn't make it past 28, yo.
Don't even know how old I am.
Got shot with a fucking projectile mishap bullet. Like,
it's fucking
fuck.
Crazy.
Sucks.
And nobody got arrested, went to jail for that. Alec Baldwin,
yeah,
you hear?
He's over there flipping the gun.
Right.
I need another take.
Right,
another
right,
take.
Right, right, right.
You know, but no, it is
the time
is.
It came out, especially when nobody was really making comic book movies. And for it to be the comic book that it was, like a black and white, like Dark Horse comic, and it's just dark, dark,
different.
Dark,
yeah,
dark.
Yeah, I'd say it'd have been somebody trying to make like a Grendel comic. Like, bruh. I don't think we can do this.
See, kids, we bring it back to comics eventually. Don't worry, stay with us an hour in and we're leaving.
Exactly.
God, we're an hour in already. We're not leaving anytime soon. I'm just getting started.
No.
But that soundtrack, also, taking it back to STP with the Big Empty. I don't know if Big Empty was on Purple first. In other words, I don't know if I heard it on Purple first, or I think I heard it first on the fucking Crow soundtrack.
Yeah, I guess
it might have come out
I know they both came out
around the same time.
Yeah, a lot of times with that like album, like companies
will tease this.
It may have been in the can
right,
already. The
right.
record may have been done like late '93 or early '94, and they were like, "Hey, we," because back then it was a big deal.
I always
like,
think it's kind of a fucking. I'm making a jerk off gesture right now. It's kind
yeah,
of a fucking like a fake load. You
yeah.
know what I'm saying? Like, okay. I think all soundtracks, I think this should be introduced to Congress and made a law. You do a soundtrack, don't put it on the album. Let it be something special so people got to get the soundtrack. Because a soundtrack,
yeah.
a good soundtrack, am I right? I mean, The Crow's up there with, like, top tier soundtracks because
I mean,
it had all these fucking songs
bands,
on it.
Big bands.
Songs
yeah.
that you couldn't get on other albums. And also songs that just fit really well with the movie.
For sure. It's got to
be know,
a
balance. You know, that Cure song, the fucking Nine Inch Nails song, the fucking...
And
Mary and Jesus Chain.
Well, the whole point is that sometimes movies, you're not just plopping songs in there.
Right.
And if it's a big budget movie like that was, I'm sure, it's a situation where like...
For
hey,
what it was.
Let's get some pretty big...
Right.
Because almost pretty much everybody on that
Even
album...
Even the Crow 2 soundtrack. Movie not nearly as good, but the soundtrack held some fucking weight.
For sure.
You know?
Hell, the Spawn soundtrack...
Let's talk about it.
...was pretty solid.
Let's talk about it. That fucking soundtrack.
Uh-huh.
That fucking Sneaker Pimps and Marilyn Manson shit. The fucking...
Dust Brothers were
Korn
on
kicking
there.
The PA.
Korn, yeah,
even that
yeah.
Incubus and DJ Gravy.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's pretty cool that you're able to stick all this stuff in, especially back then.
Back
because
then.
Because people wanted to... They had people they hired to go, let's pull some cool fucking music for this movie.
Soundtracks are pretty much by the wayside now, right?
Oh, it's a joke. I mean, my wife loves scores...
Love scores.
That,
love a
that's
good score.
A different deal, but when you're coming to putting cool songs
except
on
maybe Guardians of the Galaxy, they kind of brought it back a little bit.
A little bit for that, yeah, because there's classic songs, but it fit with the theme of the movie.
It did.
It's kind of like us going, here is we sound like broken records. I do. But like you go back to like a Bill and Ted. They did so good with that too.
Yeah, they did.
The first one's great too. Sorry, Matt Reeves. But they took the second one because they had a budget and they said, well, let's just get all the guys. All the cool alternative rock bands.
And they showed up in the movie too, kids.
Yeah. And I'm like, you look at that list and you're like,
Jesus Christ. Fucking Christ.
And I'm like, it's pretty rad. And you also had songs that were one offs. To bring your point back
Love a
up.
Good one-off. How about that Encino Man?
Yeah, and they did. Yeah, and they did. There wasn't on any other record. It was on
That's
that.
The way it kind of should be.
Yeah. It makes it a little more special. Occasionally it works out nice. Certain drama movies, they'll use perfect songs. It's like watching Goodfellas and hearing Layla.
Right.
I mean, Chef's Kiss. Right. I get it. That's different. Right. But that's a complete vision. When you have someone.
I'm going to throw this out there. That acoustic version. Fucking beats the shit out of that fucking original. I'll say it.
Acoustic version.
That fucking acoustic Layla.
By who? By them?
By Clapton.
Oh, Clapton?
Yeah.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. I feel like an idiot. Sorry, guys.
Yeah. Got me on my knees.
It is good.
Because when that first dropped, it was like, oh.
But as a musician, and let's get back to
you just like that. Yeah, you like that. Yeah, you like that. That's true. That's true.
Dwayne Allman laid the gravy on that.
That fucking Allman, dude. God bless his soul. Rest in pieces.
Yeah, he died in a motorcycle accident, so there may have been pieces.
I didn't even mean to go there. Yeah,
I'm just being real.
That was part of my dialect, you know, because I like to do a little
plausies. No, I think he was in a piece. He just bashed his head real good, I think is what
Jesus,
happened
didn't have to say bashed.
Well, I mean, it's true.
I mean, bashed?
Yeah.
I mean, God damn.
And then a year later, the bass player who was already having a hard time dealing with the death of Dwayne Allman from the same band from Allman Brothers, then he died a block away. From where Dwayne wrecked on a motorcycle a year later.
Talking about a rambling man here.
Yeah, to say. And then they're like, shit. And talk about being married to two people in a band. Man, being married to fucking seven or eight of them motherfuckers.
God damn.
And then your brother died. And then your great bass player died. And you're like, well, we got to keep on going, boys.
It's a little easier when you're in a band called Little Feet, you know, to just get along.
Yeah, and, absolutely.
Know, and I'm willing. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. You got to keep it light.
I'm ducking out of this now.
Yeah, but being,
I've been to everyone is out
of being in a situation where you're trying to create the right vibe within a group of people artistically, it is difficult.
The podcasting is easier.
Well, yeah, because you can just be yourself and you can
roll
just
up here roll with some mics. You get a guy or
fucking
a gal.
Fucking singers show up with a little mic and that's it. Easy pickings.
Hey, I helped plenty of drummers pack their shit.
No, no. Right here, I'll say it right 100%. Nick never had LSD, lead singer's disease.
Right.
He always did a great job of that. You actually did help. Yeah, for sure. No,
packing, unpacking. Unless I was too drunk.
I was making fun of someone the other day at the store about that. And I was like, do you got a case of, you seem like you might have a case of LSD. And he was like, wait, what? And I was like, lead singer's disease. I was
you show up with your microphone.
Yeah, I was like, you got your little Sennheiser
you got the set list? You got the set list?
I'm going to go to the bar. I'm going to hang at the bar for a minute. You guys
I'm
going
to get a burger.
Right?
I'm going to talk to this
15-year-old
girl.
There's a fucking drum rack in the trailer.
I think she's 21, but she might be 15.
I don't know, man.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh, man. I think I pissed myself. Oh, shit.
Yeah,
but, you know, it is what it is when it comes down to
it. It is what it is when it comes to that. What was the first thing you heard that made you go, all right, I'm going to play some music?
That's a good question.
Or did you just gravitate to it?
I mean, I had a lot of music around me, but the first real memory I can have is I had like a Fisher-Price little tape cassette player.
No shit.
You know, like white one with the little smiley face, some shit. And I can remember listening to Talking Heads.
Damn.
Talking Heads tape. It was my parents, whatever.
Stop Making Sense?
And like, I don't remember honestly what it was so long of that. And then when I was about 8 or 9 for Easter, I got a cassette player, guys. A Walkman.
Oh, you know, was it a Sony guy?
Yeah, one of the gray ones.
I had a Sony. I had a Sony Walkman.
And I got that for Easter. Yeah. And then I got a few tapes. I got Gwar Ragnarok, which we spoke of.
We
just
spoke
the other
of it
day.
Recently.
That, oh my ass. Yeah, that's a good job with that. Yeah, that one will get you too. Used to make that stool that he's sitting on. Used to make my nuts fall asleep.
Yeah, my nuts are asleep.
Really?
Yeah, and my
that's
ass.
That's so great.
It's not the butt cheeks. It's like it's
no. It's like your gooch.
I'm getting to this part of my age where like. My asshole will hurt.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
While you're saying yes. Yes. Yes.
Yes. Someone else finally has been here. You know, I got
God.
Now I got tarsal tunnel of the ankle.
Tarsal.
I have tarsal tunnel. It's foot carpal tunnel.
Not mouth disease.
No, I got that too.
Oh, shit.
I think it's halitosis.
No,
I'm not
a foot and mouth.
I'm not sure.
But the fucking Walkman.
Walkman, AC/DC.
For so that was shit that you heard and you were like.
No, these are tapes that I was either given as a gift.
You're right.
Or I went to Roses.
Mm.
Roses, and I got Ozzy Osbourne, Blizzard of Oz.
Blizzard of Oz.
A Blizzard of fucking Oz, fucking bro. Ozzy. Yeah, fucking great. Ugh. And I got.
That was a thing back in the 80s. Like, they'd do like playoff of shit.
Oh,
like,
Pons. Yeah, it was all the good shit. Yeah, right. So and I was a kid. I didn't really even get it.
No, you're just like, and Blizzard
then I got,
of Oz.
And then I got older. I was like, oh, right. Yeah, cool, dude. Yeah, right. And then like I got.
Cinderella.
Soul Asylum, Let Your Dim Light Shine with. Frustrated.
Oh, that was the one after
after the Black Gold.
I know Boy. Just what you want.
That record.
I know. Right. Yep, that shit's exactly. Actually a pretty good song.
And I got that at probably at 8 or 9 at Roses. Right. And then the Guar from Sam Goody or Musicland.
So we're about the same with that regard.
Yeah, because my parents were like, hey, you want to get this? That's cool. Like, you know.
Like a tape, listening to it, and then like not just loving music, but like thinking to yourself, like, I think I want to play.
Yeah.
Like I would jump on my bed listening to Guns N' Roses. With a tennis racket, pretending it was a guitar and like playing, like performing.
And Guns N' Roses and the Chili Peppers were the other two when I got just a hair older.
But what made you actually like write?
Where
you heard something, you were like, you picked up an instrument for the first time, you started learning their songs.
I just had enthusiasm to want to mess with the instrument.
Yeah.
And a lot of people with students I have, they feel like it's just going to just fall into their lap.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't realize the reps that
you
they
just,
have
yeah,
to get.
You just got to fucking fuck around
so
with it.
So when you, I try not to always give such a like, it has to be, you got to play it just like this,
right.
This all the time.
Right,
you just
right.
Got to play.
Just play it.
It's called playing an instrument.
Just like, play.
You know, you're not going to have to practice it all the time.
I like to play.
I don't like compared it to video games, but a great bass player, one of the best bass players of all time, Victor Wooten, compares it to video games.
Victor Wooten.
You play a video game.
Was he in Modesky Martin and Wood?
He's been in a lot of shit, so okay. I'm not the best with him.
Right.
But what I'll say is that he's comparing it to kids now. They're not going to, you know, practice a video game. You want to play, you know? So it's like.
Well, I think a lot of kids, even in our day, to kind of take a. Would try to like learn like a Nirvana song or Goddamn Glycerine from Bush.
Whatever it was, excited them.
And they would be like, just start a band. Like, right. I can play Glycerine and just start a band. It's like, well, hold on a second.
Pump the brakes here right. A little bit, right?
Because I was in said bands like that where we'd like learn a couple songs.
Yeah, I want to jam.
And I'd be like, oh, I'm going to sing. I'm just going to try to sing. And then I remember it wasn't until like mid to late 2000s, like 2008-ish, where I started actually really just picking up the guitar and playing it.
Right.
And just fucking around. And didn't really learn songs, but I just kind of learned some cowboy chords and just fucking around. And I didn't start writing shit till like, you know, like... mid-2010s, you know what I'm saying? So,
yeah, and you just kind of gotta
it just takes time.
You just gotta start somewhere, and like, it's just like, I don't know, I'm not a great artist when it comes to like painting or drawing, but I see it with people who are like, come, I can keep messing with it, I'm gonna keep messing with it. Like, just fucking paint.
I wrote a lot of lyrics,
put your signature on it,
right?
And put it on the fucking wall,
composition books,
whatever
for
you're gonna
days,
do,
right?
And then keep moving on,
keep
it's
moving
gonna,
on.
It's gonna keep
you're gonna
better.
Write some dog shit. Saw my mom today, she's doing okay, she felt the need to pull out some, I guess, some old poems and lyrics that were stashed away somewhere in my dad's old office. It somehow got pushed in a folder and went to her place.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, aren't these wonderful? And passed them on to Jen. Jen's reading. She's like, looking at me like, ooh. And I'm like, I've read one. And I was like, dear God. Because I think I was like 18 when I wrote it.
Of course.
Right. Oh, God, dude. It's like seeing those old, like an old Facebook post come up where you're like quoting something and you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah, no, you get those. You're like, oh,
little reminders.
Little melodramatic, huh?
You know? Like, so dramatic.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, God.
But the whole point, though, is that people, any artistry, you just kind of have to keep working at it.
You got
to
keep working at it.
And yeah, and I don't always follow this because I don't have a lot of time. You know, we all don't have a lot of time. But you work at something consistently, you're going to have things. The universe will give you bits mm-hmm. and pieces. If you don't, then you're going to expect motivation over discipline to be just like, oh, I'm just going to get this great idea. And then if you come up with a great idea, it's going to be like, uh-oh, ran out of time,
right.
Or got to go fix the car, or the kid needs to be picked up. And you're like, well, there went that idea. But if you're working consistently at something, you have to. And some styles of music, since we're talking music, you're able to just coast with your technical ability because you kind of just write it a certain this works, but if you got to get better at something, then like it ain't just going to fall out the sky. So you have to kind of really work at it, you know, and go, okay, you know, or you go back and listen to something you wrote before and you're like, fuck me. Like me, I got to really learn some a song to play for the recital, for the music lesson studio. And I'm like, I could play it. You know, it's not that I can't play it, but it's like, I don't remember how any of those riffs go. I wrote it when I was on a roll. I wrote it. I just wrote it. You know, period.
And dude, I think back. I've listened back to stuff we've done, and it's been a few years now. And I'm like, I don't even know if I remember how to fucking play that shit.
Yeah,
now.
And
that
happened.
I just wrote it in a whim in a garage and fucking put it out there. And
exactly.
And then I'm sure I could figure it out.
Yeah, all the best musicians in the world do that. They're like, man, we're gonna switch up the set list this year, and they're like, dude, I haven't fucking played this song in like since 1997 when we fucking wrote it. And that's cool too, because it challenges you as a musician to go back and learn some, especially if it's like you have a pretty good solid piece of music. You know, it's not like some shit demo that you were like not really that proud of. You're like, that's a cool completed song. And you're like, but I don't know how to play it.
Right.
You know, so it kind of gives you a challenge into yourself to learn your own material too. And you're not just jacking off to it. You're just like, I want to perform it.
I mean, you can.
You can, and I probably jack off to it. You know,
just whacking off. Still hold a lot of love for those Adam Sandler albums, you know? Grew up on this shit.
Of course.
You know? Pretend it's I'm the delivery guy. Watch me whack off.
The mustard in sir, you're under arrest. Oh, you know, good stuff. I got to burp really bad.
Let it out. If you have a burp inside you, let it out.
I'm getting that point with the beer.
God damn.
Is that bad?
I can smell the pepperoni.
I bet. Yeah, I haven't had any.
Oh, none?
None pizza yet.
Oh, shit.
Not at all.
There's something that was in there.
Yeah.
Why didn't you eat first? Aren't you hungry?
I don't like to eat, then drink. I like to drink, then eat. Yeah. Hits the bloodstream quicker, kids. You got to learn.
I like to drink, then eat.
Yeah, there's a system here, guys.
I don't like to eat and drink.
No, I don't.
I don't like to drink and drive. I like to drive and drink.
I like to drink, then let it settle, then drive.
Yeah, let it settle.
Then go home
then
and
go
eat.
Then go home and eat.
I'll be fine, guys.
Right. Sometimes I put my shoes under my bed, so when I get out of the bed, the shoes are already there. I got to lean down. Then I'm already leaning down, so then I pray.
I put my had Billy Madison go, I got my boots on tight. I hope I don't get in a fight.
Right.
Back to school. Back to school.
I can't wait to grow up, Billy. Don't you ever say that. Stay here as long as you can.
Exactly. That's all. I mean, what else needs to be said?
Nothing else needs to be said.
Nothing. I think at this point we're red flagged. And
I think we've said everything that could be said. This was fun, though. I wanted to kind of like just talk about some shit.
Me and him are catching up, guys. You know, we literally
just
catching up.
And then I thought we could just record it and put it out there, you know?
Yeah, that's what we want. We want to make it raw. Oh, baby, I like it raw. Oh, baby, I like it raw.
You know what I'm saying? Exactly. You know what I'm saying? First, I'm going to get you. I got you. I got you. And you can never mess with the
other people are sitting there still going, man, I think the levels could be better. The levels could be better. We fucking recorded an hour and fucking 15 minutes of shit.
Yeah, actually,
and we're good.
It is an hour and 15 minutes on the dot.
I am good at that.
You are really good.
I genuinely am good at that.
That is really... What the fuck?
I looked that up actually about 2 months ago because I felt like it was getting weird.
Yeah.
And then they said, oh, you have clues.
I'm not going to...
They claim you have clues.
Bro.
The clue would be you said we were in an hour, so I guessed 15 minutes. And they said that's the reason why, because people...
Interesting.
I think you really
knew that, though. I don't think you had the clue.
It just felt right.
It felt right, because you're good at that.
If you go like outside and you're like, man, I need to leave in 20 minutes, and you're like, I need to leave 5:56, and you look down and you're like, man, it feels like 5:52, and you're like, 5:52.
Okay.
But if that happens like six times a week...
Right.
After a while, you feel kind of like, are these clues?
You can't always say, because sometimes if you're like, man, I feel like I really don't need to wear a condom with that chick.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
I don't know, man. So,
oh, shit.
Maybe?
Maybe I do.
Oh, maybe.
Maybe I do.
Exactly.
Oh, got a wet one.
Sorry about that, guys.
No, it's okay. Listen, I love you.
Love
I love being near you.
Yes.
I'm not
I love you,
edit.
Musk.
I'm not going to edit any of this shit.
I think when this...
Ow. God,
damn. I'm so sorry. Wait till the end. I think when this is all over, me and you need to get an apartment together.
He's yelling. For some reason, the whole time it's been fine, except that one little note was like, "I think," and it was like, "Oh, right in the fucking dick hole."
Exactly.
Thanks for doing this, though. Seriously,
absolutely.
You know, because that's all this is just fucking a couple of guys talking,
just going back and forth for a little Q&A.
Right, a little Q&A, a little
finish
bit
off
of a
the
fucking...
last little bit of the 9.5. All right, go ahead. That'll be a baker's dozen, there, Bob.
That'll be about a baker's dozen. You fucking put it in the oven. You bake it.
Just working the turkey through.
Old school references.
Yes.
Ooh, it's just a fiction. Yeah. Seriously, though, if anything we said made you ponder your existence, wonder where you were in life, or made you go, is that me you be fucking talking about? The fucking with the aches and the pains and the fucking pains and the aches?
The heart.
Don't worry about it, okay? It's just fiction. All right. It doesn't matter. It's just fiction. It's just fucking.
It's an illusion.
This has been the longest orgy of sound ever. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, it feels great. You know? It feels good. Deep.